Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 168 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling The Angst of Ty Jessup, Marketing Manager for Highline Grain. From a presentation Jessup delivered at the 4th Falling Numbers Summit held January 28th and 29th, 2020 at the Doubletree Hotel in downtown Spokane. Jessup is not only a grain merchandiser based in Waterville for Highline Grain, he's one of the two industry representatives who serve on the WGC board. In his bio on the Washington Grain Commission website, he said his goal in serving on the board is to bring a commercial market perspective to Washington wheat growers. I can assure you that he does just that because each WGC meeting begins with Jessup and Damon Filan, manager of Tri-Cities Grain, providing a synopsis of the market and the forces acting upon it. I use the word angst in the title of this episode because Jessup used it several times during his presentation to describe the nervous anxiety among staff at Highline Grain when it becomes apparent that late maturity alpha amylase, called LMA, has struck once again. It's so sad, I think, that harvest has become a season of anxiety instead of joy, as farmers and elevator companies wait to find out whether a particular region or the whole state has suffered the phenomenon, which can cost millions, potentially more than $100 million in a single year. For those few who may have missed the multiple episodes I've done on falling numbers, LMA is caused by a cold shock in the spring at a specific moment of the wheat plant's growing cycle. It struck almost the entire state in 2016, causing millions of dollars in discounts in what remains the record year for wheat yield per acre. The falling numbers machine, originally created to allow bakers to add the specific amount of alpha amylase they needed in their recipes, morphed into a machine that could determine whether the germination process had started in grain that suffered rain before harvest, indicative of the start of the germination process. Other episodes have explained how the falling number machine works. Suffice it to say, a score below 300 seconds can result in a discount of a penny a point. As a former Portland grain merchandiser at an export location and with years under his belt handling sales of 1 million metric tons of wheat annually out of Highline Grain, you can bet Jessup knows his stuff. But with farms in the Highline Grain growing region hit more often by LMA than elsewhere in the state, he has had to scramble to add another skill to his quiver. The skill? Figuring out how to blend wheat for export that will meet that magic number of 300 each and every time while harming the fewest number of farmers. I've posted photos of Jessup's PowerPoint slides on the WGC Facebook page. Check them out, and while you're there, please follow the page. The footprint of Highline Grain is roughly the area north of Interstate 90 from Spokane to Wenatchee, and as you'll hear ahead, Jessup has his opinions about why the region is hit more frequently. But being inside the bullseye weighs heavily on the staff at the cooperative that are responsible for ensuring export specifications are met on each and every load. And that all starts with the farmer hauling his grain into the elevator. You'll hear Jessup alluding to Paul in his presentation. That's Paul Katovich, CEO of Highline, who also presented at the summit.
So, I'm just going to kind of go through some of the things that we face for shipping, binning grain, the complications of it, which, a lot of this is stuff you guys already know, so we're just revisiting it, and I'll just try to point out some details to it, and then, some of the viewpoints from the exporter. So, binning and shipping difficulties. As a grower, they harvest their fields, it comes in, we're going to bin it. That's really the first point of contact with that grain, that we have the means to try to do something with it so that we can meet the specifications that our buyers need, the exporters looking for, and the overseas customer. So 95% of our grain is exported, so obviously those overseas customers really drive what we do as an industry. With following numbers, there's no way to differentiate good versus bad, especially the LMA issue. It looks the same. Test weight's good. Proteins are good. I mean, and in every year, you can find maybe little things that might tip it off, but it's different every year. So it's a very big challenge. Pre-harvest sprouting, and you know, there's a lot of conversation on differences between the two. And as Paul had pointed out, it rains. We have some pre-harvest sprouting, especially in the white wheat crop. It's more susceptible than the red wheat crops. That's a lot easier for me to deal with. I understand it. I see it. I can see sprout damage. I know there's going to be some quality issues with the falling number. The LMA, no idea until after it's in a bin. And some of these grain bins you go around, and when we have one bin in Davenport, it's a million bushels. So it's a 1 million bushel tank that everything goes into. So that makes a lot of challenges. 2016 was the big year that it really hit. You know, Paul has alluded to, there's 12 out of 14 years that the Highline group has faced it in some fashion. 2016 was the whole state, the whole PNW, much more widespread, much more severe than we had dealt with in the past. So it's really brought it full circle. Okay, how do we deal with this? We need to figure out how to blend varying degrees of falling number, which some of which is not blendable. You know, it becomes a feed grain. So this is just a snapshot of one elevator in our system. Again, in 2016, I probably looked at 15 plus thousand results from falling number. We ended up investing in our own machines. The state ran thousands of samples for us. In this particular one, you'll see they're kind of blocks, which is because it's stuff we regraded. So in that year, we sampled everything, and then we regraded a lot of it because everybody's going, whoa, what is it? So this is just, you know, in 2016, varietal. So we had Mila and Eltan coming into this elevator. You know, the date's beginning of August. You could see a distinct difference. Mila was low, Eltan was high. Okay, we saw that. We can bin it accordingly, which we did. And that's, in large part, how we were able to manage our way through that problem. 2018. So 2017 was a good year. Very, very low grade of any problems. 2018. Again, this is the same elevator, the beginning of their harvest, so it's the end of July, early August. There's Mila and Eltan. It's about the same. Now how do we bin it? I just grabbed a little snippet out of my spreadsheet. It's not all that low. Some of it's lower, some of it's higher. So it all goes into a half million bushel bin or whatever you might be dealing with. At this elevator, it is a half million bushel bin. It's a very big challenge. How do I come out of that bin? And what's it going to be? Go ahead. There's 2019. And at the beginning of harvest, didn't have any Mila coming in yet. But here's Eltan, which is our strong weight. A 181. This grain's never been rained on. It hadn't rained for 40 days. But you also had 300s. Same variety. Fields are within a mile of each other. Planted similar dates, fertilized similarly. I mean, processes are very similar. Why are we different? I mean, that's a question that we all ask ourselves. We don't know. I mean, as one of the presentations yesterday was, we're almost more confused now than we were when we started. Wow, okay, that, which it is. As you dig into the weeds, it continues to baffle. So this creates lots of issues, you know, of how do we bin it? You know, and we'll look at the test weight. We've looked at protein. We've looked at all of them. Is there something we can point to bin it accordingly, and this year there wasn't. When I look at falling numbers, 300 plus, that's a spec everybody wants. If it's down to 275 and above, 275 to 300, oh, we can figure out a way to blend that off fairly easily, you know, especially if everything is within that range, 275 on out. When it's below 250, it's very difficult to make the problem go away. It just takes too much horsepower to blend that up. The liquefaction number, you guys have heard about that on how we manage a blend on falling numbers. So it's not a linear relationship. It's not like protein where you take 9 and you take 10 and you make 9.5. It does not work that way. In one of the presentations yesterday, they were talking about, well, it hits 300, we should just stop it. It's, you know, the LMA no longer matters. 300 is the line. We don't need to see it. For me, as a, you know, trying to blend, I do need to see that, because if it's 300, I can't blend anything with it. If it's 350, I can. 400, I can. Now, there is a decreasing rate of return on that liquefaction. You start going to 450. I mean, it's, you know, the incrementally it's not helping as much, but that 300 to 400 level makes a big difference on what I can blend up and how to work that blend. So extreme variability from field to field, load to load, sample to sample. That's, I know in large part, one of the major frustrations with a producer is they planted their field, everything looks good, they go into harvest, they bring the sample in, oh, you have low falling number. They go to the next field, we get a sample, oh, that's good. Side by side, harvested within days of each other, same process, same procedures. That's a frustration. Why wouldn't it be? I mean, they don't know what's going on, and neither do we. I mean, everybody in this room is working to try to solve that issue, and that's a very, very frustrating point. So this is from the 2016 crop year as well. And these are the two blocks. Is the one on the left is the original grade that we had received. The one on the left or the right is the a regrade. So when we do a sample, we'll collect a sample for a lot. We bag it up. We send it into the state lab. They grade it for us. And so we get those results. And then, those get passed back onto the producer. At that point, they can choose to regrade for any factors they want. Might be test weight, proteins, whatever there might be off dockage. Obviously, in 2016, it was a lot of falling number regrades. So this is just showing the variability. And so what we'll do is, they want to regrade, we have a second sample from the same lot that we will send back into the state. So it's a completely different sample, bag of wheat, but it's from the same lot. Here's some variabilities. Increased by 78, decreased by 71, 47 and 50, 123 and 101. So you look at those and you go, well, how can that be? How can we change that much? Well, there's a lot of factors. Is it process and procedure? Was it sampling errors? We don't know. And then, as a handler, I look at that and go, well, which one's right? Is it 284 or is it 407? I don't know. It's in a 500,000 bushel bin. It's buried. I don't know which one it was. So it creates a lot of angst and difficulty for me on how do I manage that grain coming back out of the grain bin. So here's just my regrades from 2016. Like I said, I think I had probably 6,000 falling numbers that were officially graded from the state on my original samples. And then we had regraded 1,400 of them. So, I mean, that's a lot of samples, a lot of data. And in the same process, we're testing it ourselves of several thousand samples. But if you looked at soft white wheat, 58% went down. 42% went up. So as a producer, they have to look at this because it costs money to do a regrade. And then if it goes down, now you have a bigger discount. Club wheat, 53 versus 47. Now, if you look at the averages, average change, 3.65. Not a big difference. But look at the ranges, minus 135 to plus 123. And again, why did they change that much? There's obviously a 100-point swing is not just a difference in the sample itself. It's a sampling procedure or a sampling error or some procedure error. And which one is right? Which one is wrong? I mean, that's always the big question. Club wheat was the same way. The average change was not much. But look at the ranges, minus 130 to plus 181. Those are challenges that we face. We face it. We try to execute it. And as Paul said, everybody's working hard to do that. But at the end of the day, that producer sitting at the farm is dealing with it in the form of a discount, which in markets like this is very difficult. So it's impossible to predict what that falling number is. So it goes into the bin. We have all these samples. We're sending samples to the state. I've got guys that work at two different locations that we're just slamming them with samples. At times we were almost running a 24-hour shift on our falling number machine. We'd have somebody during the day, somebody at night coming in to run those samples, just so we can try to figure out what do we have and what are we dealing with. So you have that data. What's it going to be when it comes out of that elevator? But we don't know. Go ahead. So, here's another little snippet, a lot of ranges, 244 to 313. And as it, alluded to earlier, it's red, it's below 250, does not blend well, it's in the same bin. what's it going to be when it comes out? We just had some samples. Well, it's probably a month ago I was running some. Internally, we were 260-something. Sent some off to another lab, 225. Sent another sample, and this is all from the same batch that we had, 250. I mean, it's, you know, ranges of 30, 40 points, which is impossible to manage when you have a discount and a hard line at the end of the day at 300. So that's where a lot of the angst goes, and that's where, you know, Paul alluded to our Four Lakes crew. It's a big thing for them. I mean, they grade everything inbound. They're really looking at it. But, you know, again, they're coming out of 100,000 bushel bins, 500,000 bushel bins. They're loading cars at, was it 3.5 minutes per car? So they're putting 3,700 bushels in a car in 3.5 minutes. That blend is going fast. It's going real fast, and then they get the results after. So here's a question that everybody will talk about. I'm sure everybody's heard it. What happens to falling number over time? You know, we've obviously studied that a lot. We have a lot of grain storage facilities, so we get to see wheat as it comes into harvest and, you know, over the course of the next 12 months. So everybody always, you know, oh, it always gets better over time. No, it does not always get better over time. And I would have to say the grades that I'll have in red, minus 250, rarely get better. Those, you know, your low falling number is always going to be low. It truly had an issue and an event that made it go low. Other time, you know, the stuff that's above 250, yes, it can improve, and I think it's more of a function of a grain sweat. You know, it's heat, compaction, and time. Does sometimes seems like it improves, but like I said, it's not consistent every year. I believe it was the 2018 crop where I really saw zero change throughout the entire marketing year. It was pretty consistent. So, you know, here's a, you know, if bin averages 280, what's it going to be? Is it going to be 260, 280, or 300? Makes a big difference for us shipping. Makes a big difference for the exporter receiving grain. You know, you ship a shuttle, it's 400,000 bushels of grain. You know, so it's basically a hold on a Panamax vessel. They want to bring that in and put it on a boat. And you surprise them with a 260, one, I'm going to get penalized severely, but they're not happy because it just disrupted their entire supply chain. And, you know, most of the exporters, they're all running big elevators, handling lots of commodities at a very fast rate. They're doing soybeans, they're doing corn, they're doing red wheat, they're doing white wheat. They need to keep moving because everything, any hiccup in that chain causes them money because you demurrage on vessels, customers that are unhappy, the overseas customers, they buy something for a shipment window because then there's a shipping delay. They need to keep that product rolling. Well, if they have to shut down and redo things or buy more grain to get it into position, it slows that whole process down. Market distorting. So, I mean, as Paul alluded to, you know, Highline, we face it all the time. My assumption is it's a function of climate. We're in the more northern tier of the state. Some of that's high elevation, like Douglas County. I mean, that's at least what we tell ourselves. Helps us sleep better at night. It's different. Not everybody in the industry is facing it the same, which makes it not consistent. Not everybody's doing it the same way because we handle it differently in how much you get. There are various scales used in the industry, and I won't point fingers at anybody for them using a different scale. At the end of the day, when I go to an exporter, if I surprise them with that 280 or 260 number, I'm going to get hit with their scale, which is 25 each 25. Occasionally we can negotiate out of that a little bit, you know, and try to smooth our blend out, but it's typically never going to be as smooth as I'm trying to pass on to the producer. And so each company is going to have to look at that internally and manage their risk on how they see that they can manage through it. Everybody's going to do that differently. How do they load it? You know, if you load a barge, it's 120,000 bushels, one grade. That's a big impact. You do rail cars, usually now that we have these issues, it's five cars at a shot. So it's 16,000 bushels that you get one grade for. So you're minimized on the volume you're going to get penalized for. So everybody's got to manage that differently. But it creates angst in the industry. I mean, if you pool a whole room full of farmers and they have different companies to deal with, they have different scales, they may be upset that, oh, this guy's getting a way better deal than I am. But, you know, I'm not going to certainly point fingers at that. different bids based on falling number. So as an exporter, they may just have a different bid based on what you're going to be able to ship them. We're seeing that a lot in the spring wheat country with the Dakotas, which is more of the sprouting issue and falling number. But if you can guarantee 330 plus falling number, dark protein, they have a bid that's here. If you won't guarantee it because you might be borderline, I might ship you 325, the bid's down here. And it's not like it's a small drop. It's a significant 40-50 cent bushel change in bids. So that creates issues with how do you provide a consistent high market for those producers, which is what they need to see when you're facing issues like this and you know trying to manage that marketplace. Interruptions in shipping. So it can interrupt us shipping. You know, you get a batch of 250 falling number out of that bin. Oh, we got to slow down loading cars. Well, you get demurrage on rail cars or have to divert trucks somewhere else. You know, this time of year, you know, road restrictions. So that changes how many places I can come out of. So that impacts us. So the exporter viewpoint, you know, at some point, you know, as a producer on the producer, like, oh, it's all the exporter's fault. They've got this big discount that every handler faces. It's not really their fault. I mean, they have to manage their risk as well. That's what everybody in the room is trying to do, is manage your risk. So it creates those inefficiencies in the elevator. They have certain specifications they have to meet. There isn't a question mark on it. They can't sail the boat without making those specifications. So if they don't have the right product, they have to bring more in, they incur demurrage, or potentially forfeit a sale, which has a lot of cost ramifications. So that's what they're dealing with. But then there is also blending opportunities with those discounts. Like Paul had mentioned, there's the reason they have this stair-step discount. It does create opportunities for them to make money with a blend. And, you know, in a marketplace like this with low margins, it's tight from the exporter to the farmer. That's going to be something that they look at doing because that's sometimes their margin is what they can gain on discounts. Again, the specific contract obligation is min 300. And, you know, I heard it in the room yesterday. You always hear it when you have a gathering. Why 300? Domestic mills will take 250. Why do we have to have 300? And, you know, our overseas customers can answer that to their side of it. But in my experience and in conversations with the overseas buyers, a lot of it has to do with a domestic mill is going to buy a truckload of wheat or a rail car of wheat. So it's 1,000 bushels. It's 3,000 bushels. It's 250 or better. Can they manage through that 250? Yes, because it's going to be a pretty solid 250 or 270, whatever it may be, in a small batch form as a buyer in the Philippines or Indonesia or Japan. It's a 30 to 60,000 ton vessel. It's very large. So as you saw on some of those slides, you got variability in your falling numbers. If they can make 250 work and you make your specification 250, they may have 220s in that 250. That does not work. The 300 line is something they know can work, and if you have variability off of 300, you're likely not going to be below 250. So it will work in there, and you know, at the end of the day, they want to produce a flour that makes a consistent product day in and day out for all of their customers. I mean, that's the driver for a buyer, is a consumer base that, you know, in different cultures, can be very picky on what they get. They want consistency. So I think, you know, just kind of in closing remarks, you know, for us as an elevator operator, the thing we really need is that quick test at the elevator. That's going to help us manage that risk so much better. There's a lot of focus on the farm gate. Do we need to have it on the farm? I mean, do we put something on the combine? But the farmer's not going to have a lot of options when he's cutting the field. He's got to cut his field and put it in a truck and haul it somewhere. If they're farm storing it, they're more like a grain handler. They need to see how they're bidding that crop. And that's, you know, the real first look is at the elevator, needing to be able to bid it. Now, does it need to be, do I need to know if it's 330 at harvest time? Probably not. I need a green, yellow, red line. It's good, it's okay, or it's bad. It's really, to me, long term, everybody's always working on that. I hear it, and I think that's definitely the drive we want to get to, is that quick look. What do we have? How do we deal with it? We can find the details out after the fact, but at least then we have it segregated appropriately.
Harvest is stressful in the best of times. I can't imagine what it's like to be on the front lines of the folly number challenge. Certainly, a quick test which provides a general level of the alpha amylase activity in the seed would do much to relieve the pressure. That work is being done and progress is being made. But based on a comment made by Jessup's boss, Paul Katovich, a solution can't come soon enough. Katovich said two of his board members made the decision to quit farming this year, comparing their departure to losing two of the best players on a basketball team. That's how tough it is out there in farmland, folks. I think it's hard to enjoy episodes like 168, which I entitled The Angst of Ty Jessup, Marketing Manager for Highline Grain, but I hope at least you learned something about another aspect of the grain industry that's seldom heard. Cross your fingers there are no cold shocks this spring, and then please join me here again next week for another episode of Weed All About It!
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life, and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun, and we have our say. But Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.